Today we have a bit of a special call. We have two guest members, and let's see. Oh, our initial slide with your faces aren't here. Okay, well, Robbie and John, you'll have to say hello so everyone can see your faces.
Hello. Hi.
There we go. Robbie was a leaders member for 2 years. His dad, Chris, is still involved in the program. And he has gone through the Limitless program, is implementing surges, and will be sharing with you some of his strategies for success. John, you have probably heard Coach Adam talk about frequently. John has been with Adam since 2021. And is really running their surge process. And so he'll be going through behind the scenes, sharing their process, workflows, agendas. So we have a pretty behind the scenes call for you today. As always, please feel free to ask questions, make this as participatory as we can. And so our first question, which we're just going to round table. And Stephanie, feel free to chime in at any point too. You are welcome.
I'm here. Yep.
Okay, awesome. So we are going to round table. Let's just go round. First, we want to hear, are you surging? And if you are, what is your biggest struggle?
Leanna, how about you and Travis?
So we are not surging. When we move to the new firm, that is going to be our priority to start everybody off for surging. Probably like after the first quarter that we're there, we'll start with starting in with surge. So it'll be brand new to us, but with the new firm, we feel that would be a good launching for the new clients.
It's a good launching point for transition. It also gives you good time to prep. So the surge lesson, but this call as well, because it's recorded and you guys can go back. Like there's a lot of those, John and Robbie, it's the particulars, right? It's exactly how you prep, or Robbie was in John, like how they're integrating with their tech, and they'll walk through that. So this will be a good one, both the lesson and this one to note and go back when you guys are ready to really start mapping it out. This will be great for you guys.
Yes.
Kevin, how about you and Kevin? The Kevins.
Yes, we are surging. We have actually, I guess, for a couple years now, but we didn't do it right, I guess you could say, or as well as we did this past spring. Right. So we feel like we were really firing on all cylinders. We, you know, I think the key thing is getting your team prepped and all the preparation and the sequences and getting the processes set up like before you actually do the surge. But I feel like we did outstanding. Our team was on board. They loved it. Or, you know, it's made the efficiency of like the remainder of the year way more efficient, because now we have time for like prospecting and other like projects and stuff that we're doing. And we're not just meeting with, you know, clients, you know, spread out all throughout the year, you know? So it's just very nice to have that from a organization standpoint. And like I said, it went really well for us. I'm sure we could definitely improve it or continue to improve it, but it was definitely a good experience. The only thing I'd say that we struggle with, which is kind of, Stephanie, as you know, a problem with us, we have so many clients. So we're, you know, doing our big kind of small client email kind of let go, or kind of helping them find another solution this summer. So I think moving forward, it'll be a lot better after we kind of get some of those smaller clients redirected elsewhere. So I'm excited for that, but no, it was really, really good experience this past spring.
Yeah, and you'll find we'll talk about the different levels you can go into. It just like you really do just deepen those levels of mastery. And you basically just automate the entire financial planning process when you're done, which is awesome.
Yes, absolutely.
Ed, how about you guys?
Yes, we have been doing it for about 2 years. We obviously saw it first time around when we were with you guys back in 2018. It took us a couple of years to do it. The only hiccup we have sometimes is just the scheduling part, just not filling it. I think we're working on that and trying to get more people on the team involved in scheduling. Whereas Kevin and I have been doing it a lot ourselves up to this point. So, but yeah, it's been, you know, to reiterate everything that was said, it definitely makes you more efficient the rest of the year. And it is a sprint during those times. And you feel like you come out of it and you've accomplished so much, and then you can take a breath. So it's been very helpful for us.
Good to hear it. Ryan, how are you and Ron implementing it so far?
I think we're kind of half in, half out on it. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah.
We surge in terms of like the focus of the meetings throughout the year and client segments, but we try to smooth out like
the intensity of it.
Yeah, throughout the year, especially since I'll be taking a step back from working with clients, and we're going to be hiring, you know, service advisors and getting them to capacity. So that's kind of going to be their primary focus throughout the whole year.
Great. Well, that'd be a good conversation for John and Robbie in terms of how they went from, right, the principal doing it to the service advisor team doing it, right? And then, right, they just continue to, right, as you get to client capacity, as John will talk about, it just becomes a, right, who are you trading up or down to maintain your revenue load relative to your client load? So good. I think that'll be good for you guys to think about how to step into it, whether it's intense in terms of the number or a little bit more spread out. It's the system. The more you spread it out, the less efficiency you gain, but it's still a massive efficiency gain. We have people do them quarterly sometimes, and it's still a huge plus. So I think today's conversation will help for those of you who are working on it, because there's always stuff to improve. But as you're easing into it, or Liana, for you and Travis preparing for it, it's about figuring out what that model is, and then what's the right model for you in terms of number of meetings and what to cover, and then how you ultimately transition that to other advisors, which does create a lot of continuity in the firm. So we'll note that for you and Ron as well. And then I think a couple of people joined. We got you all for now. Okay. Do you want us to kick off, Allison, with John or Robbie?
Yes.
All right.
They are ready to go through the process with you, Robbie.
Perfect. So as you guys,
yeah, you guys if you have questions as we go, you can drop them in chat, but it's leaders, so plenty of time and small groups. So feel free to just unmute and ask questions as well.
So this is the best practice for the surge process. And it is a good reminder. We were talking about this in the lifestyle breakout, the coaching call a little bit ago. And John, just hearing some of the things you say as well, a lot of the pain points we've had with surges after rereading this, it always points back to, yes, if we actually implemented and followed the best practice and did some of these steps, it would reduce some of the pain points we're having. So it is a really good process to go back to and stay up to date with. But the big thing on it, I think, is the four main steps, the scheduling, the preparing, the meeting, and the follow-up. Those are always a part of any surge. They're going to happen. And it's the kind of break out the bullet points beneath them that really you can flex based on your company, the way your team works, how everything's set up, and just make sure you're optimizing it for yourselves. But yeah, again, it's scheduling. You got to make sure you're reaching out well in advance. You're really following a schedule of 6 weeks out, getting in touch with clients, getting them on the calendar, sending follow-ups, maybe having phone calls for people that still haven't scheduled, trying to get them into the surge. Because if not, you will have people that 2 weeks after the surge ended said, hey, life was busy, I never got back to you, I'm sorry, can we get together? And it's just really frustrating when that stuff happens. Or because you can't just ignore that level of planning, you now have to fit that surge conversation into the next surge conversation with them. So got to stay on top of scheduling, preparing as well. You got to make sure the work's done in advance, because it can get really hectic. I'll go into today a bit of, we have a lot of surge meetings in each surge. And when you're trying to prepare while also running the meetings and follow up from meetings that have already happened, you can quickly just lose track of everything and kind of get derailed on this. So preparing well in advance, getting it as organized as possible. The meeting itself, just make sure you're fully present, staying
really on top of and involved in the conversation, not again worrying about the other three steps of this process as much, just really making sure you're there with the client. Because if you follow this process efficiently, you should be able to spend a lot of that conversation just working on the relationship and spending time talking to them. And then following up. One of the hardest things we've struggled with, absolutely, especially myself, since I have a 2 and follow through from my Colby test, you got to make sure you have somebody on the team that's leading that post-meeting work, or it does get into, we had these incredible meetings, promising all these things, clients loved us, we never followed up and did the work, so then they got mad at us and we had to repair the relationship in the next surge. So just make sure you have people that are delivering what you're promising. And it's not just if you don't have people, make sure you have the technology that can help you do it. I think that's
great. Thanks, Robbie.
Yeah.
All right. Anything to add here on the process slide, John?
No, just like Robbie said, like those are definitely the 4 steps: scheduling, preparing, meeting, and follow up. And then as your business changes, like our business is completely changed in the 3 years I've been there. So well, the processes underneath it, how you execute it, and that's okay. That's part of growing as a business. So
yeah, and I know someone had mentioned issues with scheduling. Can we just take a couple minutes to talk through what I'll call kind of the learning points in each of those. So for scheduling, I know, right, Adam's got that pretty nailed down at this point.
Yep.
Robbie, you guys have a pretty tight process. Can you guys just talk a little bit, we'll go through the phases, but when you think about scheduling, what were the, like, anything you would share for anyone who's like, how do I get clients to schedule? What about the people that don't reply right away? I mean, I know after a couple of cycles, people get really used to it and they're just like, oh, it's time again. How are you guys handling the scheduling? Are you following up with people if they don't schedule? You just want to talk a little bit about that step.
You want to start, Robbie? You want me to?
You can, John.
Okay. Yeah. So like on the slide here, we definitely do the email six weeks out, and then we'll send the reminder for the four weeks out. We will call the remaining clients. Kathy will call them once. And then if she doesn't get a hold of them, I will do the final call. And then at that point, we're not following up with them anymore. We're saying we did all our work that we're going to do on that, and they don't want to meet. And that's totally fine. And where we're at with that. One thing that's worked well for us, and it works well because of our niche, is pre-scheduling. So like at the end of our current meetings now, we're scheduling our next surge on top of that. It works well because of our niche, because our niche is optometrists. And if you ever go to your optometrist office, they pre-schedule your appointment for the next year. So it really matches what they do. So like, we just got lucky in that regard. I do it. This makes sense why my financial advisor would do it as well. We have about 60, 65% of them pre-schedule. So that even, we just started that this last year. So that's even made scheduling even easier for us as well. We typically don't have a lot of people reschedule those meetings. And we know life happens, but it's not enough that it's a quote unquote issue for us. We're not spending a lot of time dealing with issues like that. Oh, Stephanie, I was going to say
optometrists, because they follow a similar practice. It's really easy, I think most people would be surprised how easy it is to get clients on board. Your first surge or 2 in particular is where, right, you do a little bit more nudging. But by the third one, people are like, oh, the email's here. If I want a meeting, I need to click the link. And right. And they get really used to it.
And I set it up too. They said, oh, like clients were like, oh, what's our next meeting? Or when we're onboarding, I said, come hell or high water, I want to meet with you in the spring and the fall. So I'll annoy you until you respond, which is the email, call. But I said, after that, I'm not going to follow up anymore. And then the other ones that we have for some of our clients, I said, it's completely optional. We'll ask once. And if you don't respond, we're just going to move on. But that's kind of the expectations I set. So they know they're going to get bothered or whatever word you want to a lot about the fall and this in the spring.
Yeah, setting expectations is really helpful. If you let people know you're going to get these emails from us every spring and fall, because this is our meeting cadence, it helps us stay on top of taxes and planning, and people go, okay. They don't know any different. And truthfully, unless you tell them, they don't know that you're meeting with every other person in that same period of time. I figured out the firm that I worked with, you know, when I started 20 years ago, I was like, because they had a presentation, I was like, are you giving this to everyone? And they were like, yeah. I was like, that's so smart. Right. Because the core conversation of what they wanted to talk to clients about really hadn't changed that much from client to client. Yep. How do you, Robbie, anything on scheduling on your end that you would add? And then for each of you, what's the follow-up? Like, is there a trigger? Like, you can only miss X number of meetings before, right? Somebody actually has to call and say, you're a client, we need to have a conversation with you once every 2 years. Like, what's the trigger for, hey, you've said no to too many meetings in a row?
Yep. That's a great question. I'd say the scheduling, it's very similar, John, to what you're saying for your process, is we are trying to push them for meetings. We do have a list of, we'll invite them once, and if they don't respond, we'll try again for the next surge, but we're not pushing on them too hard. But there are clients that we tell them, we're going to bother you until you get on there. We do track if they miss, because our two main surges for, again, our niche is physicians, if they miss the tax planning surge, then we have that financial independence end of year surge, and we have the list of who did not respond and get into tax planning. So that way our communication is a little different of, hey, we missed you last surge. We do need to get together before the end of the year. You need to schedule. And that really helps with those conversations, and they kind of solve themselves eventually a lot of times, because they'll get into that and say, hey, I really wanted to check tax withholding. I was like, that's why we asked you 4 times to meet in May and June. And what are we going to do now at the end of October to adjust your tax withholding due by April? Yeah. So it's one of those that it usually clears itself. But yeah, if someone goes, that's the only clients we've lost besides passing away over the last few years. There's been a couple that were like, you just won't get into surge meetings, and we're doing everything we can to meet and work with you, but you respond once a year with some fire going on and ignore everything else. It's just not a fit. And we do part ways with them.
That's good. Well, and it does tell you, right? Who's engaged, who's not engaged. Like, skipping a meeting is fine. We're all busy. Skipping, you know, 3 or 4 meetings in a row is a red flag, right? That we need to be having a conversation with the client about, right? Their planning and their level of engagement. Yeah. So I think the important points there, one, the first time you implement surges, right, you'll send out the links and people will be getting used to it. So you do want to make sure you've got diligent follow-up. To John and Rob's point, if you can, at the end of meetings, be like, hey, let's go ahead and schedule your date, or here's the link for next year's, fall's meeting. People will absolutely get in the habit of that. So it just becomes like, this is the thing to keep in mind, is you're training everyone. You're training yourself, right? What do I need to do? You're training the team. What do they need to give me? What do I need to give them, right? So that this kind of circuitous loop works. And then we're training clients to, hey, we're going to, you know, you may have noticed we meet twice a year. We're going to try and organize those into the spring and fall because we want it, right? People go, okay, that's fine. We have people shift to surges and they don't even tell people that they're shifting to surges. It's just, hey, we're going to start using this automated link, right? So you have better, it's easier to schedule, and people go, okay. To Robbie's point, very, very infrequently will you get resistance to the surge itself outside of a, hey, I can't make a meeting time. So I'd love to know, like, for people that can't meet in surge windows, do you have other periods? Do you one-off? Do you tell them they have to wait till the next surge if they call in the middle?
It's a bad answer, but it depends. Yeah. We have been trying to, so kind of like I said a little bit earlier, we switched actually the preparing stage with the scheduling stage. So that way we're preparing everyone's surge plan before inviting them on the calendar, because we're only shooting for about 80% of clients to actually sign up for a time slot. And the nice thing about doing that is we're still delivering some kind of Loom video summary plan to the people that didn't get on the schedule. So I feel like we're still adding value and touching base, giving them something that they can walk away with. But It kind of helped us calm down a little bit of like, why won't they schedule? We're mad at them. It's like, yeah, life gets busy.
So you're, so you're doing the prep in advance. The cool thing about that is, to Robbie's point, with Loom, everyone gets that touch. I suspect you'd actually have a few more people be like, yeah, I'm busy. I got the update. It's good, which can be good in terms of, right, we only have meetings if we need meetings. Again, we're just watching that cycle to make sure they're not, right, missing too many, because then we want to make sure they're like, we want them to be, to know that we're doing it, but we still want to talk to them at least once every 12 to 18 months. So they know we're the humans behind the awesome.
Yep. And some of our Loom videos have literally been, here's this plan, but you have a huge tax withholding issue. We just can't check it because you wouldn't give us a pay stub or get on the schedule.
Yeah.
And it is what it is unless you get back to us, like, kind of thing. And then they almost always immediately respond to that kind of video coming over to Loom.
Yeah, I like it because it's a personal touch. Loom is so good for that, but it's so efficient. You can... If you get Peter Lazaroff and some of the other top advisors out there in the big firms, he did an article, I think it was last year, and I had a follow-up conversation. He just calls his top 20 clients once a month. And like the meetings just started to like go away. It'd be like, they'd schedule a meeting and then they'd be like, we don't need a meeting anymore. We talk to you every month. And it really is just the relationship equity there is built up so high. So Loom's kind of do that. Like, hey, we've checked in, everything's on track, or here's what we need from you. It is like a mini review check-in pre the review. So I like that step.
I think 80% of clients responding to the positive is about right. So if you're doing over that, congrats, I want to talk to you. But if you're at that, I think that's a great expectation. Yeah. You're not going to get 100%.
Yeah, you're never going to get 100%. So each of you, like to John's point, you figure out where your point of nag begins and ends. It's just clear expectations. Hey, we've reached out to you twice. We haven't heard back. If everything feels good, you know, we'll see you at the next meeting. We just want to remind you, right, we're here and we're doing our work and it's all important.
Yep.
What you'll find is your teams, as you start to go through this, these paths become very clear in Calendly, and like you can solve that with, okay, here's the email for people who scheduled. Here's the people for email who haven't scheduled. Here's the email, right? Here's the last chance email. And the team just handles that seamlessly. Mm-hmm. So that as the advisor, you're not worried about any of those details. You're just showing up and handling the client meetings. So there's a lot that you can do in scheduling and in Robbie's example in prep to take 80% of the heavy lifting out of the typical process or the typical meeting, which is great for your team, but also great for your meetings because it means that you're actually talking about focused things that are really intentional in a purposeful way. And the rest of the meeting is, how's it going? What can we do for you? Right. And that is John and Robbie, we talked about this in lifestyle. Yeah. Just around what you're presenting in the meeting. So I know you guys are going to do a little bit of show and tell there. I'll save those comments for after. Anyone have issues with follow-up? For those of you who are using or half using Surges, this is the part, Leanna, for you and Travis. Ryan, I don't know how you guys are. The follow-up is the part that really foils people up. Because we talk about it, but if you're not paying attention, it's easy to miss, which is you don't want to have everything from those meetings due immediately. And that's where we use what we'll call the bucketing strategy, no different than investments with time horizons. It's at the end of the meeting, you want to recap, right? Here are the things we talked about. Here are the next steps. And you're going to bucket those next steps typically into three categories. Hey, this is something we need to take care of in the next couple of weeks, right? Near term, important, has to get done in the next 30 days, right? Those are, right, the team's going to take care of this right away. Next, things for next meeting. Hey, this, you know, blah, blah, blah on the house. We want to take some time to look at that. We're going to add that to our meeting in the fall. We'll be reaching out to get prepared. Okay, great. This and this, right, the beneficiary change, and let's open another account or do a 1031, like, let's get this thing done over the next couple of weeks, and the team will reach out, and we can start to tackle these things, so we can make sure that everything's wrapped up over the next couple of months. Does that sound okay? And 9 times out of 10, the client's going to go, okay, unless there's a timeline that doesn't work, in which point they're going to tell you, which is exactly what you needed. Hey, I actually need to get this done by July. Okay, great. We'll push that to the top of the list. So one, as John mentioned, setting expectations on the front end and setting expectations at the end of the meeting, super helpful so that your team doesn't have, right? When we talk about surges, it's the meeting schedule that's hard for you to keep pace with, depending on how many you schedule. Remember, you can schedule 3 is easy, 6 is a lot, right? So it's kind of like building a muscle. Start at 3, work up to 4, right? If you can get to 5, great. Robbie and Chris do 6. If you're like hyper efficient and you have a very specific niche, you can get to 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. Some people love it. Some people can do it. Like, I don't do 6 calls a day unless I absolutely have to. Because by 6, I'm like, I just need that time to breathe in between. 4, I can do no problem. When I surge leaders calls, like 4 is a standard day. And then I can do 5. And if I need to do 6, I can. But the thing is, I don't do anything else on those days, like nothing else, because it's really intense focus. So surges is like you're at the Olympics, right? Before and after is all the training and prep to make sure, right, that the performance goes really, really well. Let's go back to John and Robbie. I think you guys were going to share your actuals. What are your surge schedules?
Yeah. So like on this slide, we're just kind of talking about like what you just mentioned, Stephanie, is this your comfort level. Like I did 8 meetings last week, but I particularly like doing probably 3 or 4 a day. But, you know, just working out the math of how many you want to meet per day, per week, and then how many meets you have, and you can figure out how many weeks that's going to take. I mentioned this the previous conversation today, but I like to take a break if we're doing over like 9 weeks. For example, I'd take a break at maybe week 5 and then maybe another week 8, just to give me some breathing room in regards to follow up and meeting with clients. And I'm kind of an introvert, so I do need a little of the mental health break there from meeting with all the clients in such a short time.
Yeah, Robbie, you're doing 5 or 6 a day, right?
Yep. And because we've been doing it for a few years, we've done the 3 a day. We've actually, I think, tried every combination of this. And this is all, I think, personal preference, but I felt like 4 or 5 a day led to 8 to 10 week surges, which gave you enough capacity each day to just be really inefficient at anything else going on in work and life. And the 5 to 6 meetings a day really condensed our surges down to the 7 weeks, with that 1 week right in the middle that no meetings, total break to catch up on everything. So yeah, it just makes it more efficient for, I get to hang out with all of our clients, all my friends all day long, and then get over the surge quickly so we can get back to everything else going on.
Yeah, you do. I find, I have this debate when I look at my calendar, I tend to have a bit more flexibility, but it is kind of like anything that you do, like running, or if you've got a sport or a hobby, like it's a lot of work at first to do those 3 or 4 meetings. Once you've got the process down and the team's got it down, to Robbie's point, your brain does it again, as long as it's right, it's not like lifestyle or you just only want to do the 3, your brain starts to go, I could do 4 a day. And then it would go from 9 weeks to 8 weeks. And then you're like, I could do 5 a day. And it would go from 8 weeks to 7, you know, like your brain starts to look at things in terms of, do I want to surge for 12 weeks or 8 weeks? Well, I could do 4 meetings a day, but if I do 5, and that's where you're really just getting into mastery, right? To Robbie's point, if you have 4 meetings a day, technically that's not more than 4 hours. If you're doing it really right with your breaks in between, like you still have time to kill on other things, but if you put 5 or 6 meetings in, like you have time for nothing else, which is kind of the goal. And then you have a lot of time the rest of the year. So it's about how much you want to intensify those surges. But what's most important is that you have a structure, you get the systems down with the team, And then you can, I think I shared Ben Brandt, for example, started with quarterly surges and then went to mid-year surges because he just wanted to see how that cadence felt with the team. We have clients who surge 1 or 2 weeks a quarter. They just break their clients into like two batches. So it really depends on lifestyle and preference. A lot of our advisors with young children tend to spread them out a little bit more, just because if you're out sick for a few days, you've missed 15 meetings or something. There is no right or wrong. 3 is good, 6 is bad. It is absolutely what is the pace and the cadence that you and your team can start at. And then as you've heard both John and Robbie say, you perfect it and you really hone those skills over time and it gets easier and easier and easier.
And Steffi, to add one thing to that too, it depends on where your business is at too. Like for example, when I started with Adam, I was working with 50 clients and we were onboarding 24, 25 clients per year. And so needed more space for onboarding clients. Now my book is basically full. And so when I'm surging, I'm just meeting with repeat clients or clients with prior relationships. So it's much easier than those new ones.
Now, are you guys surging in? Are you able to take on more clients because you're alternating surges or are you just maxing surges and focusing on other things during the downtime from a service advisor perspective?
For me, I'm focusing on other things. Like Adam and I are working on another business line, revenue line right now. So that's been kind of my focus where Kate, as you can see in the slide here, we trained her up to the point where she's taking on relationships. So her schedule is free to build her book to what she wants it to be.
Yeah. And just for those of you that have service advisors, as each service advisor gets full, right, you're hiring ahead to the next person and then they become the onboarding advisor so that, like, for example, John is and Adam aren't getting interrupted by onboarding because, right, that next person's sitting in that seat. And once the close has been made, right, then Kate will pick up, take them through the onboarding process, and then they naturally become her client. And we just repeat that cycle until she hits X percent of capacity, right? And then we hire the next onboarding slot, right? And then just fill them up, add the next income engine, fill them up, add the next income engine. So it solves for that onboarding crunch, which is one of the big problems Adam had when the growth engine really started to work is now I've got all these clients, I have no time. And then John had time, right? He gets filled up. And so now that model is essentially built and Adam just decides how many advisors he wants to expand to, depending on, right, how big a firm he wants to lead.
Exactly.
Which is bigger, I suspect would be bigger than he says. Because Michael and I had a good debate about that. We're like, oh, watch this. It's going to be funny. Yeah, we already know what challenges he's going to have before he has them. We keep telling him. The high quality problems that come with growth, right? Yeah. It's like, we call them hiccups, high quality problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and show and tell here about the things that we do. There was our team there. So it's myself as a lead advisor, Kate, who's our service advisor, like I said, going into a lead advisor role, and then Kathy, who is our heart and soul of our organization, who runs a lot of these things. And we're very, 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 very lucky to have her as part of our team. But let me share my screen here.
We'll not talk about Kathy retiring. We shan't not talk about it.
So this is actually our workflow for this. So we use Redtail. We're a big, heavy Redtail user. And so this is how it comes into our Redtail. So we decided we're starting surge. We decided that we're going to reach out to all of our clients. So Kathy's made that invite and ask. And so as clients come in and say, yes, we're ready to meet, this is where this workflow would get kicked off. So Kathy, her term in our system is client service. She's going to copy and paste that information from the activity, like client wants to meet on this date at this time via this way, typically Zoom. And the client wants to talk about this particular subject. We obviously modify the dates so the dates show up at the proper time here, and then add items to the agenda. So client in their input form, when they set the meeting, either by phone or by Acuity we use, they can say, hey, I want to talk about my kids 529 plan. I want to talk about adding another practice, whatever here. So we'll make that. And then Kathy will prep a thank you email confirming the date, time, and that the items have been added to agenda with a very light agenda of just the big areas, the five areas or six areas of financial planning that we'll cover during the meeting.
Hey, so, John, can I ask a clarifying operational question?
Yep.
When those items are added to the agenda, I don't know if all of you were doing that. I am a huge fan of sending the meeting agenda out a couple weeks in advance, saying here's what's on our agenda. There's anything that has your attention that you'd like on the agenda, please let us know. One, it makes you look really on top of it. Two, to John's point, they will tell you things, not all of them, but some of them. And when they raise their hand to tell you something, it's because it matters. So like to ask before the meeting versus in the meeting makes you look more proactive. Two, it gives you an opportunity to prepare if such an opportunity is helpful. And that was my question, John, right? Hey, I want to think about buying a practice is different than I need to know if I should add a wing on the house or X, Y, or Z. My famous favorite example is we had a client years ago who sent out the letter and it was, hey, we just found out mom needs to go into a home. And right, we're really worried about like how that's going to play out. And then of course they have a relationship with the client, comes to the right, add the agenda, comes to the weekly meeting. And it's, and then the principal was able to say, okay, we know brothers and sisters have no money and are not great people. They're not going to help out. We know, right, mom's in a different state. So let's run cost of care for high, medium, and low price facilities in mom's zip code and in client zip code. And then let's run, right, the cost analysis of the impact of that on the financial plan, right, retirement, if we start to. So they do this, client comes in, this comes up, obviously, first item on the agenda, and the whole conversation is, hey, we took some time, we ran the number. A client was like, floored, tears, like, thank you, never leave, bazillions of referrals every year, because they took the time to ask, and in this case, do a little prep. How do you guys, so that's a long and loaded question, but how do you guys handle, some things just need to go on the agenda, some things, like, how do you surface, and Robbie, if you have something similar, how do you surface that for Adam or Chris to say, hey, I think we need to, do you guys do that? Do like, what's the process when things get surfaced? Do they just go on the agenda or like, do you ever do advanced work? And is there a process around that?
I mean, it does come onto the agenda. If it's something big, Kathy, when she inputs it, she'll either flag it in the act on the workflow here to make sure I read it, or she'll let me know. Like a client recently, what's going on? We're getting divorced. Like that would, so we had to kick off like a whole process because of, obviously we have a fiduciary duty to both clients in that case. And obviously they didn't want to meet together. So she'll let us know about that if anything big comes up there. Also, it'll show an agenda. So I'm trusting Kathy with her professional judgment in regards to what's something that's really big and I'm going to need some extra space to make a decision about, or what's something she can put on the agenda. What's the IRA contribution limit this year? Something really simple that doesn't need further thinking on it.
Yeah. And you mentioned in the call earlier, just right, the symbiosis, like the relationship between you and the team becomes really important. I think this is a good example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So sending the email, then Kathy's just making sure that the links in eMoney or Right Capital or Element, whatever you're using, is updated. And if it's not working, she's just letting us know which ones are. We can decide if they're important or not. You know, sometimes it's their kids' savings account, which we didn't want the link anyway, and so we're not worried about it. Sometimes it's their outside brokerage account with, you know, $1.5 million in it. And so we'll either press for the statement or make a decision on that. So we'll follow up with an email to the client saying, oh, we really want that statement for your restricted stock units or something, or we'll just leave it as is. Kathy will process that paperwork, and then she'll prep any forms that are needed. So a lot of these are things that we can anticipate. We know a client's going to do a backdoor Roth IRA. We're going to strongly recommend it. We're not going to take no for an answer on that because it makes so much sense. We'll go ahead and have Kathy do that. Journaling forms, money movements, anything like that that we might be missing, or some really low-hanging fruit, like they have a revocable trust and we can change their brokerage account into that revocable trust. Here, this is where I'm really depending on my service advisor. One, I view my service advisor as kind of a guide. We're going through the jungle. She has a machete and she's cutting all the leaves and branches down so I can clearly see the path and think of on a bigger picture. So that's where I'm trusting Kate, my service advisor, to do that. So she's running the financial plan, seeing everything so I can think on a bigger level. Like Stephanie, that's a great example there of someone, you know, Kate running the financial plan, but just not thinking about the next step of like, okay, how do we run the long-term care scenario on that? And then additionally, I have her utilize a meeting checklist, which I will share here. So, because we like to keep our red tail clean, you just can't make a checklist within a checklist. So here we created a separate checklist just for the meetings with more detail in that. As Kate started, my expectation for her was to print this out and like write notes and check it off. Now that she's more experienced and I have all the trust in the world with her, I just expect that she's going through this and I trust that she's doing that. And it's really easy. If she were ever to miss it, which she never does, it'd be really easy to catch that she's not following the processes that I want her to. I broke it out down into like foundations, what I call like why the heck are we even meeting? So like, what questions should we ask? What follow-up should we have? Is there any measurable progress? Have they hit like a certain net worth level they'll be surprised at? Maybe they just became a millionaire and they had no clue. Maybe they hit $5 million and just checking everything here. This is with our niche practice management. We'll ask for something just specifically for optometry. So I expect Kate to provide some of that data for me. Debt management. There's always some categories that will be topical depending on what's going on in the world. This one is with rising interest rates. We had a lot of ODs making extra payments on low interest, like a mortgage at 3%. And then they took an equipment loan at 8%, but they're making extra payments on the mortgage, not the equipment loan. So that's kind of topical right now. Investment portfolio. This is my expectations that I have for Kate for reviewing that portfolio. I'll make the professional judgment if I want to cover that or not. Some clients want to talk about it, some don't, but I do want this information to figure out what if the portfolio is doing what we expect it to do. Other information, contributions, withdrawals, some tax planning, some estate, some insurance. And then I have age-related items. Is the client turning this specific age? And if so, what decisions have to make with that? Popular ones, the 62, when most clients want to take Social Security, they don't understand how it works. 72, R&D requirements are coming up, or the kids are turning 18, power of attorney documents. So this is what we use. It's a living, breathing document. We'll change it to improve it, to remove things from it. But this is my expectation that Kate does for my clients. So when I get the advisor prep review, I'm getting an agenda with all the items that I want to talk to her about it and think at a bigger picture and not worry about if the performance of the portfolios on there or not.
Yeah, it really lets you frame what you want covered in your quote Correct. Model meeting. The cool thing about that is you build it out, as you've seen John do and Adam, right? Because they operationalize everything, mm-hmm. is you're not necessarily going to have every section filled out in every meeting, but as you fill them out, you literally have hey, it's the estate planning review meeting cycle. We're going to fill up, you know, right? The team's going to go yep. through that section of the checklist. Hey, it's tax planning or right valuation time, we're going to go through that portion of the checklist. So you've got right your CRM managing right the operational process, but the actual plan review, that checklist is there to guide whoever's providing the plan review and input so that there's a standardized way. this is where it gets really efficient. If you're doing this over and over and over, right? It's like, here we go again. You're going to run everybody's age report, right? You're going to have all that information and you're going to be able to, right? Kate, in this example, can prepare really efficiently. So we've created two levers of leverage, right? Now, Adam has John has Kate. Kate has, right, six standards, systems, and processes saying, focus here, do this. So we're not figuring it out each time. What does this client need? Which is where we lose 20 or 30% of the efficacy in most processes is, right, figuring out the next step, customizing it to each client. This, it's all done. And then you're customizing and personalizing that top tier of the experience, if you will, which just makes it just for a much more effective process.
Yeah. Well said. This is after the meeting. So we actually obviously meet with the client, dictate notes, which can be challenging. I just recommend that you get that done immediately following the meet, immediately when the meeting's done, to do that, whether you're dictating it. Last meeting we talked about, we're starting to use AI for it. Robbie's going to talk about what AI they're using for dictating notes. That's another way to do that as well. Adding tasks to let the client know like when that's going to get done, and then getting the action items. I'm depending on Kathy and her professional judgment and what I have in the notes to make sure what things need to get done are getting into the CRM at the time I expect them to do that. We have expectations for that. So they set that calendar for me because I'm going into the next meeting and I need them to organize that for me. Everything else is just processing notes, send email to clients saying when the next meeting was, if it was scheduled, and then reschedule the appointment or schedule the next appointment. This is if they don't show up for the appointment, then we have a whole different process. But anyway, then the whole process kicks over again and then we're on to the spring. The other thing, this is our sample agenda. I changed out the client names, but this is a example of what Kate prepared for me. And so I was able to go through this and then I would prioritize what I would want to talk about with the client. But obviously we know, maybe I want to talk about taxes and the client wants to talk about, retirement. And so it throws the whole thing off, but I'll put it into an order that I want to cover in importance and take it from there.
Steph, you're on mute.
Do you have a sense of prep time for Kate and then prep time for you? Obviously, it's pretty nominal for you.
Yeah, probably for me, given where I'm at right now, probably 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If that, probably where Kate is right now, probably 30 minutes. But when she was starting out, I guess my guess maybe be an hour.
Yeah.
But
hour to an hour and a half first out for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I ask, I mean, I know the answers to these questions, but I ask because in this case, I want to really highlight how efficient it can be. There was a time when Adam was great. He had to build the system for him. Then they had to rebuild it for him and John. Now they've added the third layer, right? So Adam is really largely out of those. John is the lead advisor. Now he's got Kate, as we talked about, right? We'll replicate Kate over and over. And now the system is largely built. It's just, right, having an automated process and a review checklist for every single thing that could possibly ever happen, which I suspect you guys are pretty close to at this point. And then what you heard John and Robbie will talk about the same thing. They've got, right, all of this efficiency means they get to talk about things that are unique to their clients. So Adam has a whole, because his clients are business owners for the most part, right? Has a whole layer of like looking at the business and practice management the way that we do, which is hugely valuable to his clients. And they have time to do that. So one of the huge benefits of Surge is I always ask this question, how many of you spend as much time as you would like with your top clients? Right. And then we always tell the gold star story, right? We're just not going to talk about all the reasons we don't, right? The idea there is this lets you spend all the time that you need with your top clients. What you're going to find is you don't need nearly as much as you think you do. Like the meeting prep for John, for not like a little client he's not paying attention to, like a client is 15 minutes because all the prep is baked into the institutional systems. Adam sat down and spent hours going, I want it this way. And then we're going to click this button, right? John sat down and built the review checklist that said, these are the questions. We're going to use the age numbers. Here's how we're going to do it. But once they've done that once, it's forever. It's for every 3 years, right? You're going to update processes, right? Obviously, but it gets really efficient. It just becomes part of like, hey, what's in the service queue this year? Let's refresh that part of the process. If you're spending more than 15 or 20 minutes preparing for client meetings, that is ding, 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 the bell that says, I'm over investing in meeting prep. And I will tell you as your consultant and coach, it's very likely not showing out the other side in value and results, not from a relationship standpoint and not from a plan or a return standpoint. So we just want to suck all that inefficiency out of the process. So model meetings, surges, and then that MVP service model that you can build on from there is going to get you 70% of the lift from surges. So Leanna, for you and Travis, understanding you're waiting, just one more thing of change. But on the other side, this is priority one because you're getting platform, you guys really need to pull a lot of efficiency into the process. So when you're in the process of changing everything, you're so uncomfortable, just change everything. But you've got a runway and a lot of experience in front of you. So you guys can skip 80% of the painful learning process, as we like to say. Ryan, for you and Ron, we just need to get you fully into surges. Whatever that schedule is, so that we can really commit, so we can get the gains. And Ed, you guys are doing them. If there's ways to optimize, when we will do our check-in here, let's just talk about what levels 2 and 3, where you are in that process, so we can continue to help you evolve to that greater specialization and optimization with automate, right? They start to intersect in a really, that's where service models get sexy, right? Because all this stuff that John is talking about just happens, right? Adam doesn't sit down and go, oh, what's the client and their business? What do I have to do? It's all like, here's how I want it. And it's ready for them.
Yep.
Robbie, you want to do a little show and tell for us?
Yeah, that'd be great. Sorry if I kept disconnecting. My internet has just given up today. So
I had to get up and close the window because we're having a massive summer storm. It's thunder and lightning out my window.
Well, I appreciate you bearing with me on this. If I do cut out, just let me know so I can repeat it. But a little bit about the team, and I know some of you already, so it's good seeing you guys again. For everybody else, we do have 5 main members really involved in surges. We all have our different roles, and we also have 2 people not on here. I probably should have added them. I didn't think about it, but they're part-time client service that are really helping, almost like administrative assistants, just getting all of the post-meeting work done, because that was our biggest headache for the last few years. So my main role, just kind of, instead of getting into all of them, is with client meetings. So because of that, we've done a lot of things to get me out of any prep, any communication on the prep side, any post-meeting work whatsoever. It's really, how can I just meet with as many people as possible in this surge to get the surge completed as soon as possible is our big thing, while also leaving room for onboarding and growth.
Yeah. And I just want to add here, and I know you all know this, but for as you build teams, there are really 2 people who love sitting across from clients. And if you have those people, they're so valuable because, they're sitting across from clients, and we want to optimize every minute of their day. So we talked with this with you about this back in May with Michael. Remember, the kinds of capacity we have are client capacity, like how many client meetings can I have, right? Just a headcount issue. You've also got revenue capacity. $105,000 clients is very different than $150,000 clients, right? And then you've got your optimization, right? Are we using surges? Do we waste our time in email? And those 3 factors determine how much each income engine, AKA advisor, produces for the firm at what profit level. You hear stories of firms growing broke. It happens all the time, by the way, because that cycle we talked about from Adam to John to Kate and that next hire, if you're growing at a certain rate, you can actually, right, have more headcount costs than you have revenue coming in, right? Because it takes a few years to catch up. And that's the cycle as you all start staffing up. When Michael said it's staffing, staffing, and staffing, and then I drew that line and said, and optimizing, optimizing, optimizing. The big mistake firms make is they don't optimize the capacity of each advisor. Surges is one way to do that. So it's one of the levers we really do encourage you all to pull, because to Robbie's point, we want Robbie in as many meetings as possible, because that amps, right, his capacity. And then rather than having the average advisor manage 700,000, they can manage between 1 million and 1.2 million. And your margin just went way up. And the number of people you have to pay went way down.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say that if I got paid the same, but I had a job that was 5 hours a week of post-meeting work or 40 hours a week of client meetings, I literally couldn't do the 5 hours a week of post-meeting work. It's just impossible for me. So yeah, you just got to right person in the right seat, traction, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So for our surges, I did want to share our calendar. Make sure I'm sharing the right one, because I think it's important to kind of show how much our process has changed, changed significantly over the last 3-4 years of us doing this. So real quick in this section, what we're telling prospects as they're coming on board is we're trying to get you as quickly as possible into our annual pulse. That annual pulse is kicking off the year with goal planning. What is going to come up this year? What goals can help keep me accountable for? Anything outside of that that we need to be aware of? Any big changes that we should kind of earmark? So just a major check-in to kick off the year. And then if they're doing tax prep with us, tax prep and planning is a huge part of what we do for physicians. So it's not really a meeting surge. It's a surge for our, planning team, where they're really involved in tax returns for 6 weeks at that time.
Yeah. So this is when we talk about value adds, right? And annualizing the service calendar, like what are we doing in January or March? Again, you have other things, client experience, et cetera. This is a really good example. There is value being delivered outside of meetings. It's focused and concentrated, AKA surging, but it's topical. So that schedule could change. We have a lot of clients who do like a 3-year cycle, like, hey, and Q1, February, it's going to be this special. And then next year it'll be, right, something else. And so you can, especially if you have smaller client segments, I don't like having multiple cycles across multiple segments. It's more to manage. But if you put those smaller tiers on a 3 or a 5-year cycle, you can cover all the basics profitably, and in all fairness, they don't need to review all of those things every single year. So it's just a way to think about how to focus on parts of the planning process or specialized value outside of meetings. To Robbie's point, it might be that you shoot a limb video and send it off. It could be a letter with an update, right? But it's work that's being done in a surge as part of the offering, the service model. It doesn't have to all be you in a meeting is the takeaway there.
Yep. Yeah, Stephanie, you're absolutely correct on it. Because it's the more efficient we get with this and the more clients are bought into it, all other aspects of planning can easily happen through email, a phone call, or a Zoom video. It's just so easy to trickle them into a conversation we're already having or handle them outside of it. So it really eliminates a lot of those meetings between surges.
Yeah.
And yeah, we do have our two main surges, mid-year tax planning and late-year financial independence. And then we do a big company benefit review with everyone during their open enrollment later in the year. But again, that's a planning surge, less of a meeting surge. So our way of laying this out was really trying to make sure just again, from doing this for the last few years, we're hitting the topics when we need to, We're really making sure that these parts of the planning that is so important in our opinion for physicians is happening every single year at certain times, and we never miss it. So we can, again, easily pivot and jump in on other stuff when we need to. Some of the things we've learned is help so much to completely block out the week before, the week after, and the week right in the middle of all surges to get everybody on the same page this first week, kind of relax a little bit, get ready for it, really try to catch up, breathe, take a minute, and then really try to make sure all your follow-ups are done and you can walk away from the surge. So it's helped us a lot. We have 6 slots on Tuesdays and Thursdays and 5 on Wednesdays. We give ourselves 1 evening a week, well, besides Monday, Fridays, that we're able to relax a little bit. It's one of those over the last few years. I mean, last year, this whole calendar was pretty green. We just surged the entire time just because of growth, things going on, not being efficient, starting. A lot of it was the scheduling and the prep. I can't emphasize enough the process. If you drop the ball on the first two in any way, leads to so much more follow-up post-meeting work that it can extend the surge significantly or cause people to get frustrated. So we really kind of switch things up to make sure the prep is all done well in advance so that way we can focus and just knock these out as we go. One of the things too is like a couple years ago when we were doing it, we're like, we're getting the hang of this. We're doing really well, until I spoke to Adam and he mentioned that they are doing a goal planning meeting at the beginning of the year, John and Adam are, and completely changed the way we're doing things. It was just so simple, but the greatest idea I've heard in a while, and totally changed our business to really kick off the year, not just for us, but the clients. This is their favorite meeting from what we've seen. So
very cool. And just to add, if you think about annualizing the service calendar, so that's where Robbie and Chris are really kind of at that level too, where they're pulling things out of meetings and, quote, the financial planning department, Ben in this case, right, is going through all the client files. So you could imagine across different segments, if you look at this very nice color-coded calendar, that you could literally break it down by month. Hey, because, you know, the question is, what does a planning person, I am a huge advocate of having someone in the planning role that isn't an advisor from a client facing perspective or a rainmaking perspective, because those are the two jobs that are revenue sustaining and revenue built. Like, we could have a whole conversation about that from a staffing perspective. The question is, well, what does that person do outside of meetings? So they're really busy for 8 or 10 weeks, and then what? And the answer is, they're literally doing all the planning work across the client segments in those batches. Hey, we're going to look at everybody's insurance in February. And like an email goes out, hey, we did X, Y, or Z. You're all good. Click the link if you want to talk. So you really can get to a point where meetings are hey, we just need to sit across from you and, right, build the relationship, because we've done all the work on a systematic schedule over the course of the year. That's that third tier of the wedding cake, where you can literally map it out on a cycle and the planning happens, and the advisor is just there to sit across from the client and be a face and a relationship to represent all of the work that's happening behind. And that's where you get optimized teams, going back to leverage and capacity. So it's just really cool to see you guys moving from where you started into that second tier. And then ultimately, right, you'll just nail that process.
Yep. I have a question for either of you guys or both. In regards to, so 2 surges, are you surging all clients twice a year, or through your segments, do you surge like your AB group twice a year, but your CD group, they're only getting 1 surge? Do you guys differentiate between your client segments?
Yep. Great question. We have about a little over 200 households that we work with, but 125 of them are really in the surge process. So I'd say 125 are kind of in all of, well, at least these 2 main surges. There are about 45 of them, we're estimating, that really they don't need that early year goal planning kickoff. But we do have those C-level clients, smaller clients, and the traditional, we manage a few million dollars of their money and they don't want to talk about anything planning. They just want us to manage their money. So We do have some of those still, but yeah, we're inviting all 125 to each of these surges and shooting for hopefully about 80% sign up for meetings. We'd love to get to only 10% sign up, but we're still delivering all the planning for everybody. And that way we don't have to meet as much. But yeah, right now, just really trying to make sure people are involved in the process. The clients are part of the surges. They're getting all of that value delivered to them. And yeah, as we grow, because we're adding about 40, 45 new clients a year on average, that's where this 6-week window, it is breaking up a little bit to, we have 6 meeting slots a day on my schedule, but Trey also has a schedule who's stepping into the lead advisor role. There could be at some point 6 meetings for Trey and 6 meetings for me in the same day, because we do have our 100 clients that we're servicing. So
and that's where you have to start looking at, okay, who is it, Kate or Ben, like who's preparing? And then, right, you have to make sure the surge, right? And that's where then you build on the back end of that. And that's where cases where we might alternate surges, like, okay, you're going to be March, April, right? And you're going to be April, May. And again, you're always just going to be running into how many meetings can you fit into your surge periods? And then if you have multiple advisors, what kind of workload does that create for the planning group? Cool.
Yeah, for our CD clients, we meet with them once a year, and they're predetermined if they're spring or the fall. But a vast majority of them are twice in that twice a year level.
Okay, thank you.
Are the once a years for either or both of you? Is it just whatever? Do they get whatever meeting they happen to attend, or are you offering them one of the meetings because that's sort of the most covers most of the bases?
Yeah, we've assigned them if they're a fall or spring meeting. They have no clue, but some clients are these, some are for spring meetings, and we just offer that one time.
Yep.
Almost all of our once a year clients are either they have so much money and they're older that they just want to check in on their distributions, the investments, maybe some tax planning, or they're a C or D client that we probably won't get into that level of tax planning, but we'll just check in, see how they're feeling, see how things are going on. So it's a pretty similar conversation across the board for all of them whenever they schedule it.
Okay. Good. Very helpful. Other questions? We've got a couple minutes. Ed, anything you want to add from your perspective? How does this kind of marry against the experience you guys have had?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, these guys are just different levels of efficiency than us. So I've taken a bunch of notes to go back and review, and it's just perfecting the system. So, and then optimizing those income engines. So it all ties in though, kind of what you've talked about before of just right sizing and delivering the right service model. So it's all like, it's just that next step there. So, but yeah, it's, we're headed there. We just got to get as good as these guys over time.
Yeah. And I think John and Robbie, feel free to correct me, but I don't think anyone launches at, we nailed it. And I say this, and I don't ever want to scare people off, but I would say like year one, you're just like, you're getting through it and you're figuring out the big ticket items. Like, oh, that follow-up thing is an actual problem. Let's pay attention to the bucketing strategy. It will save us later. You know, I think by year two, you've heard Robbie talk a lot about this and John, like, oh, we're going to put a meeting in the middle. You start to tweak it because you're like, you know what, this is what I can do based on, I call it my level of training, right? Like I could run 5 miles right now. I could not run 15, right? So level of training, like I'm not going to do 6 meetings a day, right? Robbie, like he's got that part down. So, but notice they've got those tweaks. So the debriefs are really important. And then looking at each cycle and getting really clear about like, what's that next level of cool that we could make it? It's just something to think about. So yeah, we'll talk about that when we do our check-ins, is like, let's just talk about how to just turn it up a notch, because I want you all to think of this as like, you're rowing a boat, right? You're going to get to the island of growth. It's going to happen. Just good service and good time. We're trying to put, right, a really fast motor on the boat. while we're rowing the boat. It's real work, but there's all these barnacles on the boat. And barnacles are, I'm still checking my email 17 times. I'm not using model schedule. I'm kind of doing surges. We've done some work on like all of those things. If we can just chip them off one by one, and very much to the point, like lay the tracks and get started, you're not going to perfect surge out of the gate. Again, Leanna and Travis have a specific timing, but like, where's the trigger where you say, hey, you know what, this is worth investing in, because it's the best way to gain back time outside of personal productivity, which notice was the third leg on that capacity stool. Because it's very real, but advisor capacity is both at the personal level, like how do you spend your time each day, but at the client service model level, that's the big lever you have to pull so that we can grow without a lot of complexity, because all those moving parts compound as you grow. It gets more stressful and you got to hire more bodies, and we're not putting everything through the lens of that. Have we optimized for capacity across all these variables? And that's why you read about margins going down and stress going up when firms grow, because we're compounding the barnacles. So our goal this year for each of you is to make sure that you're at least implementing at the value level, model meetings, some version of surges, or you have a plan to do it that makes sense, and that MVP service model, right? What's on the agenda for the meetings in the basic form. And then we'll add layers 2 and 3 when we've kind of got the process down the way that Robbie has, like, okay, now we can have the financial planning, greed, tax planning. Like, was that hard, Robbie? Or they were like, yeah, we know how to do this now.
Yeah. It's once you do it a few times, it just really, I don't know, no matter the first time you do it, it is just not going to go well. We stumble our way.
It's going to hurt. Yeah. It's like walking out of the gym 2 days later where you're like, ow, I felt that.
Yeah. My total trends.
Robbie does have a few other things that I think would be helpful to share, too, especially in terms of the meeting agenda and the process around that, if you want to share those.
Yeah, and total transparency on it, too. I mean, last year's tax planning surge, I only got to, because we didn't have the team set up in a way with somebody managing the follow-ups or leveraging the right AI and software, that we only did about 50% of the follow-ups, and it caused a ton of issues. So it is just try it, stumble your way through it, apologize when you need to, and do it better next time.
Yeah.
But for some of the other tools, I did want to mention a few of these. They've been super helpful for us. So as we're preparing for a meeting, we use, I guess I'll show the tech stack, a few different software tools that just really help us. They are real relevant to Salesforce Accelerate as our CRM, but you can still use them as long as you're using stuff like Google Drive. There's other solutions out there, but a good example, like the post-meeting wrap-up of that 5 to 10 minutes, it was a part of our process that after every surge meeting for 5 to 10 minutes, we met with the person doing the follow-up, kind of summarized everything to get it done. That was a total fail for us. It just did not work. So it's one of those, we started using Fireflies. We reiterate all next steps, what we agreed on in a summary to the client while the client's still on the meeting. And our assistant, Trinity and Aaron on the team, they'll do the post-meeting work and wrap up and send it. And if there's a problem, it's usually because I didn't put it in the summary, and it teaches me to be better at what I'm doing. But I don't have time or capacity to really sit there and talk through it all with them one by one. So leveraging some of those tools, especially the pre-meeting work, because we're trying to do this prep in August, and we might not meet with that client until September, late September, early October. Loom is a huge part of what we do, because as we're building out, we'll actually create the meeting notes for everybody for that surge. We'll prep all of them. Certain people on the team have different areas they got to prep. And then Ben on the team, who's leading the planning, doesn't have to worry about some of the other stuff or just data entry. He can get in there right into the planning and put together a Loom video, a 5 to 10 minute summary of here's what we're recommending and why. And it's huge for us because, one, it summarizes everything that we can watch way ahead of time and push back with thoughts, feedback, ideas, whatever it is. But two is we're getting ready for the meeting. When you have 100 different surge meetings in 6 weeks, and you have to watch 15 to 20 videos each week, it really helps to have those there that you can circle back to and refresh what's going on. Why did we make this recommendation, put this plan together in this way, and so on. And it's been extremely helpful a year or two later when we can look back at, here's the tax plan from last year's Loom video and the year before that's Loom video. So just huge for us as a company.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier today, and I just thought it was a really compelling point, the use of Loom a couple of different places, right? Because it goes out to clients with the prep. So Robbie mentioned they switched scheduling and prep. They do the prep first. Ben records the Loom videos, the plan, the guys get them, but they also go to the clients. And so like if a client doesn't come to a meeting, they're like, hey, check the box. But when you think about, and Robbie, I wanted to ask the follow-up question, how long are you spending prepping for meetings? And then is watching the last video part of that prep for you?
So I just watch the videos and give them feedback if I have any. And then I'm jumping on 15 minutes before rewatching the video and getting ready to talk to them.
Okay. So 15, 20 minutes max.
So you said the client gets the review or gets the Loom video ahead of the meeting, or you're just using it, Robbie?
We'd like to get to that point, but the Loom videos are just internal unless they don't sign up for the surge. Since we're only getting about 80% of people signing up for the surge, we'll take it for the people that don't, we'll take Ben's Loom video and turn that 10 minute advisor facing video into a 5 minute client facing video and just send it to them of, hey, we missed you this surge. We would love to see you, but we know life's busy. Here's some things we've been checking in on and staying up to date with, and you're good to go in this way. So that's the time we send them a Loom video.
Good point of clarification.
Yeah.
The cool thing about that is if they don't schedule, getting that summary to them is really relatively easy. And it still creates that touch point of, we've done work for you, we're on top of it, we care, like it checks all the boxes. So you get, who knows scientifically, you get 2/3 of the benefit without, right, actually having to do the meeting prep, which is why, Robbie, you'll see as you get better and better at the cycle and layering in things like tax planning and specials, people will take you up on fewer and fewer meetings. And yep. That's a good thing because it says that financial planning has become a process in your practice, not an event. They're seeing and feeling it often enough that the meetings just become, again, meetings. And that's when you'll start to see those numbers. Again, they might stay engaged in terms of the number of meetings, but you'll find there's less and less substantive stuff to talk about in the meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So meetings can really focus just on the relationship.
Yeah. And that's for things like the goal planning, right? And are we on track? And what kind of mid-year adjust, like that, that's where you really start to add, right? Or doing the business planning, you start to add much deeper value than a typical planner can, because they just don't have the capacity to keep up.
Yep. And we didn't at all try to send the Loom videos for people that didn't schedule until 2 or 3 surges later, because it was really just let us get used to it. But now that we're sending them for the people that don't schedule, it has eliminated all of the, hey, I didn't schedule in June and July. It's now July 29th. Can we meet? I really do think I need to talk tax planning. It's eliminated all of those because we already gave them a summary and recommendations. And if there's something that we couldn't give in the video, they know we'll get to it in the next search.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the biggest thing for us is making sure. Here's an example of my siblings, my sister and brother-in-law. It's really just making sure when we have this level of planning, like a mid-year tax planning meeting, that there's a lot here. There's 4 or 5 pages of notes already. I don't want to have to think of, well, did Ben think of this when going through the tax planning recommendation? That's what the Loom video is really helpful on. But making sure I can just be as efficient as possible is huge, and that I'm not involved in it is huge. So it really tracks everything. There's a lot of data entry from these notes into our CRM. They do get put in different areas if they're relevant. But one of the other things, I'm just going to throw this out there, is if anyone uses Google Drive, definitely check out Notebook LM. So I love this thing, but it's a new AI tool. It's in beta right now. But we have all of our client notes and the dictation from Fireflies, everything going into one folder. And we, as we're prepping for meetings, we start a notebook for that client. And you can, it's just amazing what you can do in here. It pulls in a timeline of everything going on. Since you've started working with them, since the notes have started, it has information on all the people. You can ask it anything. Example I gave earlier, we're in a meeting and the client said they just went to Europe for vacation. And I just typed in vacation into here really quick. And it came back with some, for them, it was they wanted to go to London to visit their cousin that lived there. So within a few seconds, I told them, oh my gosh, what, your cousin lives there, right? In London. Is that where you went? And they were just blown away that I remember.
That's
that.
Awesome.
So it's like cheating your way into some of the conversations. And the reason I love it, like a lot of AI, it's great, but it's got to get better. This one, I love that as it brings in stuff, you can click on this and it'll show you exactly where it came from in the note to double check, is that accurate or not?
That's cool.
So huge fan. But yeah, it's for us, we've always had a struggle with the post-meeting work, getting the pre-meeting work not done in enough time that it caused the surge to be more stressful because we're trying to do that during the surge and with growth during surges. But because we're all getting the, we're getting the right people in the right seats and really trying to kind of compartmentalize a bit more, we're able to now grow more in surges because, again, since I'm out of all of this, I have learned more call availability and discovery process availability on my calendar still during those six meetings, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. So
pretty efficient.
It's, it feels like it the way I'm sounding it, saying it, but it's a lot of times I'm like, oh man, we survived. It's just one step at a time.
Well, I think that's the other thing. Like I tell people, like when you surge, that's pretty much all you should be doing. Like that's it truly. And resting and getting good nights of like all that corny stuff actually matters. Because you are on, like on all day, which again is why Mondays and Fridays off is really helpful. Those breaks in the middle, because it's a lot of actual energy to bring to bear consistently. And it's your Super Bowl time, right? So it's like you are playing in the big game consistently for weeks, and that's kind of like the playoffs. So it is the same thing. Like you really are an athlete in, right? John is like, okay, you know, like my kids know this is probably not the 6 weeks I'm going to be leaving early on a Tuesday just because, but right. But you acclimate and it gives you a lot of freedom the rest of the time. So
yep.
That's great. You guys have any parting questions for John or Robbie around surges or how they've implemented them with their teams? Feels like we covered the bases there. Good. I appreciate
Thank
that.
You guys
for sure. Really appreciate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. They'll pick your brains.
To do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the takeaway is the key to successful surging is starting, right? And then stepping it up each surge just becomes a natural, ooh, these were the lessons and takeaways. Yeah. I would say you guys, the first two, my experience, the first one, there's a lot of learning. I would say the first two, good, you know, by the third one, you have like, okay, we know how to do this. And by around the fourth one, you're like, okay. And then I think you kind of shift into like, all right, what can we do with this? How can we make it faster, better, smarter, stronger? Like it really almost, I don't want to say a game, but it does kind of almost be like, what can, you know, what rep can I hit at the gym today? Like, can I do yep. five meetings a day? Can I get it down to this? Can I go from 30 minutes to 20 minutes? Because you're honing your craft and you're trying to do it with a level of operational mastery that is largely unheard of in right professional services. This kind of discipline and rigor is really found in athletes and top performers. That's the attitude we want to bring to, right? How do we optimize our client capacity with meeting surges? You're going for the gold, just to keep it in theme, Allison, we should have had like an Olympic podium at the end on video. It would have been amazing right there. Just insert. There you go.
A surge Olympic podium. That would
That's
have been.
That's right. That's right. Gold star. Gold medals. All right, guys, thank you very much. If you guys, we, as always, will record this. So if you want to come back to not just the lesson, but the specific office hours, that will be available to you. And if you want to pull it up with the team, go back and look at notes. And if you guys have questions, let me know. You will be getting your August check-in emails. Again, I apologize. It was my intent to send them last week, but I was trying not to die last week, and I'm better now. So I will get those out to you with calls in the week of the 12th and the 19th. So be looking for those today and tomorrow, and we'll circle up on this and all other things Limitless. So we can put a plan in place for the balance of the year, because we've got some structure we're going to be sharing with you. All right, guys, anything else before we go? Allison, did we cover all the bases?
Yep, I think we got it. Looking forward to seeing
you. Thank you so much for your time. Cool. Really appreciate you sharing your experiences. Leaders, as always, I know it's August. I know it's summer. Thanks for coming today. Yeah. Next year, with the kids back in school, everyone will show up for meetings again. All right, you guys, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care.